All right, thank you for the introduction, Monique. Welcome, everyone. Good afternoon. As Monique said, my name is Annie Frankel, and today I'm going to talk to you about predictors of adolescent sexual behavior, including parenting, attitudes, and neighborhood risk factors. This research was supported by a dissertation year fellowship from Florida International University, and I appreciate all the funding that they gave me throughout my tenure there. All right, so a little bit of justification before I jump into the study. So I'm sure all of you are familiar with predictors of adolescent sex behavior. This is not the first time this has been studied. However, I think it's worth revisiting because of the wide-reaching consequences. Of course, an unplanned pregnancy or an STD at any age is a life disruptor, but for adolescents 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, this is something that can disrupt the entire course of their lives, their families' lives, and the community surrounding them. Furthermore, adolescents have a different risk profile than adults do. I don't think it would be a surprise for anyone to learn that they are more risk takers. So exploring this category of people separately from adults is extremely important. Third, we're missing opportunities for sex education. This research was actually born out of my experience as a classroom teacher. So before coming back to school, I worked as a 7th and 8th grade science teacher. And for us, when I taught sex ed, parents had to consent to allow to have their child in the class. And that right there is an opportunity that we could be connecting with the parents. And it's important to see whether we can leverage that opportunity in either an intervention sense or in just a communication sense. And finally, more research is needed with contextual factors surrounding adolescent sex behavior, not just why they behave the way they do, but other things that have an effect on their behavior. So here's a quick study overview. The parent study that I took this data from was done by the AIDS Prevention Program at FIU. It was an HIV risk reduction intervention. However, I only did a cross-sectional study examining baseline data. There were a lot of reasons for that, but mostly it was that the follow-up data, our N dropped off pretty significantly. So this was a nice big sample to work with. Almost 200 adolescents, ages 13 to 18, and we found them in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach Counties, Florida. This was a fairly, I don't want to say normal, but we got these participants from community organizations, from schools. So the AIDS Prevention Program at FIU had previously done a big study with adolescents in juvenile situations, but this was not that. It was just sort of everyday adolescents that were interested in participating in this trial. A little bit of background. So in order to craft this study, I used the theory of planned behavior. I'll just take you guys all back to theory 101 for a couple minutes. This model has been used successfully to explore behavioral intentions for safe sex before. And so in order to represent these different constructs of the theory, for behavioral attitudes, we looked at condom and sexual attitudes. For subjective norms, I looked at parent factors. Subjective norms is probably the least well-defined part of the theory of planned behavior. So based on the literature, I used several different parenting factors to represent that construct. And for perceived behavioral control, I looked at neighborhood stress factors. Behavioral intentions, of course, were intentions for having safe sex. This was a large scale, so it wasn't just whether someone was going to use a condom or not. We looked at whether someone was going to talk to their sex partner about previous partners, whether they were going to have sex after using alcohol and drugs, and then, of course, condom use. It was 15 different elements. And finally, the behavior was unsafe sex behavior. For this talk today, I don't want to get too broad, so I'm actually going to cut it off after the intentions for having safe sex. I'll discuss the implications of that a little bit later. So let's talk about a little bit of literature. In terms of condom and sexual attitudes, the literature is pretty standard on this. Across the board, more positive attitudes about condoms are linked to more condom use, also linked to delay of intercourse. The attitudes in general, they vary by gender. So for example, males are less likely to have positive condom attitudes, maybe because they're the ones that have to wear them, I'm not sure, but across the board, generally positive attitudes mean positive behavior. Parent factors. So I looked at four different parenting factors, and the reason I chose these was because they sort of did a good job representing a lot of different elements of parenting, and in the literature they were distinguishable from one another. The literature has been very varied with these. For communication, sometimes people find that when parents talk to their kids, there's less sexual behavior. Sometimes people believe that if they talk to their kids about sex, there will be more sex, and actually there is some literature that shows that. And then other studies have found that no matter how much you talk to your kids, there's going to be no impact on their behavior. So there's a lot of work to be done in this realm. As for connectedness, parent-family connectedness is an interesting measure of closeness and caring between parent and child. And the literature is consistent. A close, caring relationship typically means that there's going to be positive behavior. Parental presence is how much and how often there's a parent in the house when the child is in the house. And this is an interesting one. Sometimes it's a good thing. I guess you have a parent around. It could mean a close, caring relationship. It also means less time for trouble. So if you're with the kid, they can't be in their room acting up. However, it seems like there's a tipping point. So after a certain point, over-monitoring of children may lead to more risk behavior. So we're still exploring that. And finally, the last element of parenting that I looked at was activities. This was a 10-item scale that looked at all sorts of different activities between parent and child. Going to the movies, going to sporting events, talking about school, working on school projects together, and a couple more. And very little research has been done linking those to sex behavior. Finally, you guys have probably gotten this the point of this through our whole conference, but poverty, crime, illiteracy, single-parent households, and income inequality have all been linked to poor health, so I thought it was important to look at some neighborhood stress variables, and I'll tell you more about those in a second. All right, so I covered a lot of this already. The demographics at the top, age, gender, race, ethnicity, and living situation were all important to look at. The rest of that I already covered. I just want you to look at the bottom there. So my neighborhood stress variables were from an instrument called the City Stress Index, and they were neighborhood disorder and exposure to violence. Neighborhood disorder is basically a chaos variable. So adolescents had to report on whether there was graffiti in their neighborhood, whether there was trash in the street, whether cars sped down their street. Everyone's like, yeah, cars speed everywhere. And whether there were like adults yelling in the street, so all sorts of different elements of chaos. And then exposure to violence was how often an adolescent had a friend or a family member that was stabbed or shot, murdered, stopped by police, mugged, so all sorts of sort of terrible things relating to violence in their lives. I think that's all for instrumentation. Data collection. This data was actually collected between 2004 and 2008. Like I said, it was a parent study. At that time, it was collected using paper and pen questionnaires. However, for analysis purposes, I didn't want to go straight from paper pen to SPSS, so I inputted all the data into the questionnaire development system. I actually double-entered that for quality assurance. Then I translated it into SPSS, cleaned it, and QA'd. For data analysis, I did a ton of data analysis. Today I'm only going to talk about correlations and then our outcome, which we used a stepwise hierarchical regression for. All right, so just real quick, I want to give you sort of a picture of the our sample as a whole. We had about equal numbers of males and females. The majority of the adolescents were 17 years old, 16 and 17 years old. As for race and ethnicity, about half of the sample was of African American origin, with a large cohort of Haitian, Cuban, and other races mixed in there. So South Florida is very diverse. This is not unexpected in terms of our racial breakdown. For living situation, this is a little bit more varied. So the majority of our participants live with their mother only, followed by both natural parents and then the mother and stepfather. All right, so in terms of looking at those different variables and their relationship with behavioral intentions for having safe sex, condom and sexual attitudes both had a positive relationship with safe sex. So if you had higher attitudes for using condoms, you reported higher behavioral intentions. Likewise, sexual attitudes, which were similar to condom attitudes, except asked sort of more contextual questions about why and how you want to have sex. For parenting variables, this was interesting. Parental parent presence was the only variable that was correlated to behavioral intentions for safe sex. Not connectedness, not communication, not activities. This indicated that a higher level of parental presence in and around the child's life meant more positive intentions for safe sex. And for neighborhood, there were no significant findings at all. All right, so here's the result from our regression. The final model explained 29% of the variance in behavioral intentions for safe sex. In the final model, five variables were retained: gender, sexual attitudes, condom attitudes, parental presence again, and neighborhood disorder was kept in there. So for this stepwise hierarchical regression, I entered all of the variables, even the ones that were not found to be significant, because I wanted to see whether there were possible interactions between them, whereby, you know, once they were in the equation, maybe there was a different interaction going on there. So that's why these were retained. So let's talk about what that means. For attitudes, it was pretty obvious. This just confirms previous findings. So condom and sexual attitudes are an important indicator for intentions for having safe sex. Again, you know, confirming previous findings is not much of a finding. However, oftentimes we don't target attitudes in our interventions. So maybe we need to make changing attitudes and figuring out why kids have attitudes the way they do a target of what we're doing in the intervention. As for parenting, as I said, parental presence was the only one retained in the model. Like I said at the beginning, we're not going to the behavior step, but I did want to note that an increase in parental presence was actually associated with an increase in unsafe sex behavior. So for my entire study, I did look at all of the behaviors down the line. This is sort of an unexpected finding. So why would parental presence be associated with positive behavioral intentions for having safe sex and then negative safe sex behavior? It's a little bit tricky. There's probably a couple things going on here. One of them could be that tipping point of over-monitoring, where you have parents that are sort of spending too much time with their child and the child feels like they need to rebel. More likely what's happening here is a missing temporal element. So because this was a cross-sectional study, we're not looking at trends over time. You probably just have an adolescent that's parent is spending more time with them. We don't know why. Maybe they told the parent they're having sex and the parent's like, well, I'm gonna stay around more then because I don't like that. It's just impossible to know. So something else to consider is for other parent and peer variables that might do a better job representing subjective norms. These could include peer sex behavior, peer or parent disapproval of sex or approval of sex. That might have a big impact. Self-efficacy and then abstinence self-standards. So those all could have played a role in that subjective norms piece. All right, for neighborhoods. So as you recall, that neighborhood disorder was retained in the final model. And studies have found that there are direct and indirect links to adolescent sex behavior. So what do we take away from this? I mean, I think it's interesting. I don't think you could make the case to any school board that you want to include graffiti cleanup in your sexual health intervention. But at the policy level, being able to go to a policymaker and say, you know, if you clean up graffiti in this neighborhood, you could be having a downstream effect on all sorts of things, including adolescent sex behavior. That might be a compelling argument. So more research is certainly needed there. I already mentioned some of the limitations here, but again, temporality. There is no element of temporality in our cross-sectional study. Sampling, this is not a random sample. It was convenient sampled, so you know, we sort of have a limited ability to generalize what's going on. Third, the data is self-report, and I mean that in every sense of the word. Not only are we getting data straight from the adolescents, but they're also reports of perception of parent communication, perception of parent caring, perception of parent closeness. So what if you had a kid that was like mad at their parent that day? You know, it lends a little dubious in terms of using for how close or how much they communicate with their parent. The second limitation I want to talk about is scoring. This actually explains why we didn't go all the way to the behavioral step. So behavioral intentions, like I mentioned, is a big 15-item scale. If we wanted to look all the way to behavior, we would have had to look at each of those individual items and the behavior that it correlates to. So for example, what we did look at was unsafe sex behavior, condom use. So if we want to make the direct correlation, we have to say intention to use condoms and condom use. Another element of behavioral intentions was intent to talk about past partners. Then we would have had to look at whether they actually talked to past partners. And frankly, all of that outcome data was not available. So the scoring of the behavioral intentions kind of limited us from looking all the way to behavior, which is obviously a kind of a big problem. Finally, there are potentially confounding variables that we didn't look at, including peer influence, including religiosity of the adolescent, and school-based sex education. So, you know, we didn't look at the effect that education could have had, but it's definitely important. As for recommendations, we should definitely think about focusing on changing attitudes and how that could have a place in our interventions. Exploring subjective norms. Like I said, parenting factors ended up not being such a good representation of subjective norms. We should look at what can do a better job of representing that construct. And finally, exploring the role of contextual factors in prevention, particularly neighborhood factors, could help us do a better job crafting and targeting adolescents when we design our interventions. That's all I have for you. I feel like I raced through that, guys. I'm sorry. Talk too fast.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Any questions for Dr. Frank?
Go ahead.
I have a question. I noticed in the beginning that you separated out the kids with just a single mom. And the parents and mm-hmm.
I did, yes. I just didn't address it today. We did do all sorts of group differences to see if there were differences in intentions. Living situation, like whether they lived with a mother or stepfather, did not have a relationship with intentions. The only thing that did was gender. So males, in general had like less positive intentions for having safe sex. And the other thing was age. So it turned out as the adolescents aged, the 17 and 18-year-olds, things got less and less positive. So they were less likely to say that they were going to use condoms, less likely that they'd talk to partners, less likely that they'd have one partner. So I didn't get into that here, but yeah, those were our only demographic findings.
So
that had to do with how the parent connectedness score was created. If there was one parent with them, so let me see how I can explain this. We only reported the highest level of caring and connectedness that the adolescent reported. So if there were two parents and they reported very high connectedness with their mother, we only used that score, even if the connectedness with the father was so-so. So if they had a single parent, that was fine because we would have used that same measure anyways. Does that make sense? Okay. And those were all validated scales from Ad Health, so I just sort of copied the way that they created those scales. Any other questions? Yeah, go ahead.
How did you measure your reliability? Because I found you report the reliability for your questionnaire. How did you measure it?
Oh, the measure of reliability. Well, a lot of these were validated already, so I used the reliability within. And then otherwise, I'm trying to remember the actual statistical method. I basically calculated Quorum box alphas to make sure that they were reliable. But for some of the scales, it wasn't even possible because, for example, parental presence is a measure of the parent being there at three times a day, uh-huh. Morning, noon, and night. And it's added in how many nights a week the adolescent has a parent eating with them at dinner. So in that way, you can't construct a traditional reliability scale because it's like three questions of one type and then one question of another type. So, but for the most part, I calculated alphas to make sure that they were okay. Go ahead.
Since this was a randomized sample, mm-hmm. Does that mean that all the students in this study were sexually active?
No, absolutely not. About half of them were.
Okay.
Yeah, so I figured that it didn't really matter when I was looking at these predictors because even if they weren't sexually active, they might have, you know, they might still intend to talk about sex or condoms or whatever, or with their partner. I actually didn't break it down by sexual activity in terms of looking at whether those who are not sexually active had better intentions, but certainly a lot of potential there. Yeah, thank you. Go ahead.
Did you look at, when you looked at closeness of those two parents, did you look at sex differences?
Between the parent and the child?
Yes.
No, I didn't do that precisely where it was like the mother was close to the daughter or the mother was close to the son. No, but it's certainly an interesting thing to look at. I think that could have made a difference. They found particularly with communication that mothers communicating with daughters and fathers communicating with sons, there's different patterns of communication there. So it's gender matching is really important. Yeah, go ahead. Not in behavioral intentions, and actually not with sex behavior either. So we didn't find anything there.
And what was
the age range? 13 to 18. But most of them were concentrated in they were 16 and 17 years old. I think we had like one 18-year-old, one 13-year-old, so they were more of the middle range there.
I'm sorry. Did you ask if there was a difference based on age?
Race.
Oh, was there a difference based on age?
Yes. Yes, there was. As they got older, they had less positive intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And I think it lends to sort of looking at emerging adults differently than younger adolescents. Go ahead.
Last question. Was there a difference in closeness to parents based on age?
No, there was not. So they reported across the board that, you know, levels of closeness had no difference. Okay, thanks everyone.